Howdy, y'all. Welcome to the Nom Talk Network's Blazing Saddles. I'm gonna drop the accent because I'm just gonna butcher the living shit out of that. And Cleavon Little did not have an accent, so I will never, ever, ever try and do anything as good as he did in this movie. But yes, welcome to Blazing Saddles. I'm your host, Mike Manalo, and I'm very excited for today's show because I am a huge, huge, huge Mel Brooks fan. I'm here with fellow Mel Brooks fans as well to talk about one of the seminal comedies ever put to film, and by one of the greatest comedic filmmakers and comedic masterminds of our time, Mr. Mel Brooks. Before we get started, you guys will probably notice that I have a screen cap from one of Mel Brooks's best movies, Robin Hood Men in Tights, and it is a screen cap of Prince John himself. The great Richard Lewis, who we lost today. So I just wanted to pay tribute to him and all of the amazing work that he's done, especially in Robin Hood Men in Tights and all of the amazing, wonderful comedies that he's done. Curb Your Enthusiasm, Anything But Love. So many, I could list them all. We'll miss one of the best voices in comedy of our time as of today. But thankfully, we're here to talk about another great voice of our time, which is Mel Brooks and Blazing Saddles. And to do that, I've got the best panel ever, starting with my good friend Jen Athey. How are you doing, Jen? And would you like to give yourself an intro?
Sure. I'm doing great. I'm doing better now. I am Jen Athey, and I am thrilled to be here. Look who joined us just in time. My buddy Charlie is
Aww.
here. He's very excited. He also
Hi,
watched Blazing
Charlie.
Saddles. He learned some new
I
words that we don't say in
sure
this house. So,
did.
he was a little shocked about that when I had to have a talk with him. But yeah, so
Ah.
I'm excited. I love Mel Brooks. I was really sad. It was funny because I was thinking earlier when I heard about Richard Lewis, his energy and Madeline Kahn's energy and a lot of things are very similar. So I had made that connection in my head, and then that made me think more about the movie. So I'm excited. I'm looking forward to tonight and our discussion.
I'm looking forward to us talking about this and to having you and Charlie on the call as well to discuss this, Jen. So thank you. Julie, would you like to give yourself an intro?
Yes, hi, I'm Julie, and I have a little bit of a food inspired from the movie. I was inspired by the food fight scene at the end with some creamed corn and mashed potatoes. And then I
Excellent.
thought, what else goes with that? And also goes with Westerns, but a burger. So I got a little burger. It is a falafel burger because that is all I had in my freezer. So we're making it work, but I think it's going to be good. And then, also inspired by the food fight scene, I have a banana cream pie. So, that
I
is,
love
yeah.
it.
And then I am just drinking water. Hope everyone's doing good tonight.
We're definitely doing good, even better now that we get to talk to you guys. By the way, Jen, are you eating or drinking anything?
My afternoon was a little chaotic. We were like three people short at work today. So I am eating tortillas with butter and sugar like a grown-up.
Ooh, strong.
I
Nice.
also have a still as of yet unopened, oh, that looks like I'm blurring the chips for their protection. Trader Joe's dill pickle potato chips.
Those are good.
And I thought I grabbed a hard root beer and then I took a big drink and it was a pretzel
A
wheat
regular.
shock top, which is a very different flavor profile.
Wow.
So I'm having a night, you guys.
It is a terrific flavor profile, though. I do
It's
like
delicious.
it's
It's
delicious.
just
It's really
very
malty.
savory and salty compared to root beer, which I thought was going to fit the Western theme. It's not root beer though, but still good. So
Still good.
I'm trying to mellow out.
I think it's perfect and sounds tasty. Derek, what about you, buddy? Do you want to do a quick intro?
Yeah, where are all the white women at? Sorry.
Right there. Two, two.
Hi, everybody. I'm very excited to be back. I am eating just a healthy little snack. It's just what is this? Ground turkey, peppers, squash, a little bit of avocado mixed up, and then I'm lame and I'm just drinking water. So
Nothing lame
sounds
about
good.
water. Yes, love it, love it. I could wish
Water
I could
too.
say, yeah, there's water too. I wish I could say that I was eating and drinking something, but in my rush to get on the podcast, I was like, do I need the snack or the hat? Which one should I prioritize? I'll let you guys figure out what I came to the conclusion. That being said, yeah, let's talk about this movie. You know what? I literally did not see this coming through until now, but our good friend Heartless, who is on the chat, and also our good friend Q-Ball. Hey, Q-Ball. Hey, Heartless. How are you guys doing? But hey, Heartless guys. Has redeemed Sing Mode. So which I really hate, Eric? But I'm going to do it anyway.
Oh, Eric.
I feel like if you're going to redeem Sing Mode for a movie like this, there's only one way to do it. We just got to be like, he rode a blazing saddle. Shining star. His job to offer battle to bad men near and far.
I wish I knew the words better.
I literally wish I knew the words better. I Googled it right now. And I was going to sing the whole song for the entirety of Sing Mode so that we could just. Should I just do
and it's coming for you one day.
I hate that mode. We need to just remove it from the chat, but we got to give the people what they want, I guess. Yep. Anyways, hopefully that was good enough for you, Heartless.
Twice in three days.
People just love it, damn it. We're never going to get
rid of that one very often. I actually don't mind that one as much as like third person or the pun one.
I'll take third person over singing.
I'll take the pun one because I speak in puns. No, anyway. I'd rather have it. But yeah, getting back to the matter at hand, I think it's also fair. We talked about food. We got to talk about another food, which is popcorn, and our popcorn ratings of this movie. So I'm going to start with Derek. How many popcorns do you give Blazing Saddles?
Yeah, so I'm going to give it 4 out of 5. I agree that this is one of the seminal comedies of the last 50 years. If you look on pretty much any list, Blazing Saddles will pretty much crack the top 100 on most of them. I think the only one it doesn't is like Sight and Sound, but those movies are weird as hell. So I can understand why Blazing Saddles isn't on there. And it's also considered, you know, one of the best comedies and satires of all time. I know my colleague here, she was kind of going up and down between 3.5 and 4. And I too actually was struggling with that a little bit, but I decided to go with a 4 just because I think that there are some really, really good strengths in this film that truly deconstruct an era in just some absolute genius ways. So 4 out of 5 for me.
Awesome. Julie, if you're okay with it, I'm going to get to you last because I feel like you have the most controversial of the ratings here. but in a good way, because I feel like you're going to have a lot to say and I really want to hear it. But before I get to you, Jen, popcorn rating for you.
So I gave this one a 4.5. I have a couple other Mel Brooks movies I would have given solid fives to. I really like this movie. I hadn't watched it in a long time. And I there are just words I have an aversion to, even in context.
Of course.
Especially in context sometimes, depending on the context. So I guess I had forgotten. I almost turned it on. I'm like, no. But the genius of the writing in this movie, the anachronisms, the way they play with, like, they put stuff in here that's just so out of time. And I don't know, there's just something about the way they wrote this movie, the jokes, I don't know, everything, the puns, the self-referentialism, that's not a word. See, I had just one giant gulp of beer and I've lost my mind. 3 people short at work today, guys, and I'm like brand new baby fraud investigator world. So, yeah.
You're doing great for what it's worth.
Mel Brooks, his satire, his ability to kind of talk about social issues to a point where you don't even really know you're having a discussion about social issues. my friend actually was telling me her husband put this movie on the other day, and their kids are like 7 and 10. And I'm like, I don't know that I would have put it on for 7 and 10, but my kids are in their early 20s, mid 20s. So, you know, and they've, my daughter goes, what movie is that? And I was like, get out. You're not my kid. but my son's very familiar with all films. So, you know, he and I can have a conversation about it. And it's just that it's a good movie. It's fun. It's not preachy, but you can still take away a good lesson from it. And it's written, the cast is fantastic. I mean, Madeline Kahn, like we said, just the Hedley Lamarr thing and how Hedley Lamarr got so mad about it. So but then they're like, okay, you're going to get mad because sort of the name sounds like yours. Come on, get out of here. You know, it's just so clever. He's so clever and he's always so, so on topic. I don't know. I just want to hug him. I always just want to hug Mel Brooks. But this movie just was so, I don't know, topical, so well done, and so just funny, and it holds up. And there are people who are like, no, it's so offensive. I'm like, but it's not. You have yes. to watch it and understand it. If you think it's offensive, mm-hmm. you missed the point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that's all his movies, right? So, no, I like this movie a lot.
I concur. And honestly, I gave it a 5 out of 5. Honestly, there's just a wit and a brilliance to everything that Mel Gibson, Mel Brooks.
Whoa.
Sorry, different racist. But yeah, Mel Brooks does. sorry.
More offensive than the Hedley Hadley, like than the Hedley Hadley Lamar. That's just way
completely
too
different.
Yeah,
completely
that's different. Yeah.
Anyways. Yes. But there's a wit and a brilliance to everything that Mel Brooks does.
You meant different Western.
Yeah. And honestly, every line in this movie, the double entendres, the puns, the cleverness of it all mixed with, so, you know, you could be so smart and so brilliant and then completely undercut himself with something sophomoric like the bean scene, which is hilarious still. And just the fact that you've got all of these comedies working together, Looney Tunes type comedy, very, very witty dialogue, very, very hilarious, like bathroom humor and everything. It's the juxtaposition of high and low art, mm-hmm. Working at play here to make a symphony of brilliance. And that's one of the reasons why I just love this and why I've given it a 5. I do agree with you, Jen, and I do agree with you, Derek, that like we were having a conversation even before this started about how we grew up with other Mel Brooks movies that we've seen probably infinitely more and we love, admittedly, and replay infinitely more. Young Frankenstein for me, I think Spaceballs for all of us, Robin Hood Men Tights for all of us as well. And those are definitely things that are going to stay with us and be fives forever for us because of how good they are and because of how much they mean to us. But Blazing Saddles walked. It blazed a saddle so that the rest of these could actually, like, run, you know? And yeah. And I think that that's one of the greatest things ever about Mel Brooks. This movie and Young Frankenstein, they came out the same year. They made his career, and they basically helped the subgenre of the spoof movie in prominence, into huge, huge prominence. And I, for that, and for its impact on cinematic history and the cinematic comedy, I had to give this a 5. But Julie, I wanted to save you for last. Not for any terrible, terrible reason, but because I definitely want to hear your thoughts about the movie and your popcorn score. What would you reveal that for the audience?
Sure. So I gave it a 3.5, and as Derek was saying earlier, I was very torn. Reasons I was torn. Well, it's a very, very good movie. It is a solid comedy. It is pretty much a perfect example of a satire, as you were saying. As for that goes, and like the way that the movie was made and how groundbreaking it was, great. But I think it's just more for me. Like you were saying, I have other Mel Brooks movies that I think I like better. So it just seems like if we're going based on a rating system of like which ones. And also, like, I kind of reserve my fours and fives for like my favorite movies of all time. And I
Yeah.
don't think that I could say that this was one of my favorite movies of all time, but I do enjoy it. I enjoyed rewatching it because it's been a while since I've watched it. I was like, oh, I forgot about this joke. I forgot about this one. It's good. I also was gonna say there, like Jen was saying this, she has an aversion to certain words. I would say that too, like I don't want to, but like, you know, you just kind of are conditioned to things that you're just like, oh, okay, that's, you know. But in context, I don't see any other way that it could have been done. But yeah, so there's a those are my multitude of reasons for my score. But it's a solid movie. I love Mel Brooks, and it's a good Mel Brooks movie. So
I respect it so much too, because I think something that we don't talk about enough, especially when we talk about films and we talk about film criticism in general, we have this idea that like your rating, love, and appreciation all have to be mutually exclusive. Like they all have to align. And they don't. Like I have plenty of films that I appreciate more than I love. And I can recognize their place in the overarching world of cinema and their impact on cinema. And still say, yeah, I don't, but I don't love this. I don't go out and rewatch Blazing Saddles on a regular basis. That has nothing to do, it's not an indictment of the film itself because it's a great movie, but I just tend to appreciate more because I do have other Mel Brooks films that are just more relatable to our generation. One of the things we're talking about off air is we didn't, in our generation for the most part, like, the Western genre was already dead by the time we were old enough to even watch Blazing Saddles. So we didn't grow up in the 50s and 60s where, or even 40s, where Westerns were thriving, and Mel Brooks comes in and just obliterates it, like just absolutely sets the genre on fire. But our generation grew up with Star Wars. That was our first intro into sci-fi. So when Spaceballs comes around and obliterates something that we have a very deep connection to, we're much more likely to give something that personally and objectively, I would say, isn't even that good of a movie, isn't even that good of a satire, but it has more meaning to me because I recognize all of those things that he's messing around with and all of those things that he's making fun of because I have a much more direct connection with his source material than I do on Westerns. Everything I know about Westerns is from my own film history and going back and looking at them, so I can appreciate it, but I don't love it as much as the deep connections I have with the other things that he makes fun of. So.
100%. And Julie, you know, by the way, I didn't save you for last to shame the popcorn rating. If anything, it's the
Oh, no
opposite.
worries. I didn't think you did.
Oh, perfect.
By the way, sorry, I temporarily went off camera. My roommate knocked on my door, which caused a chain reaction of my camera falling and everything falling on the floor. So,
Your roommate Mel
anyway.
Gibson, right? No, I'm joking.
Yes.
We talking about
That's what that was.
racism
Yeah,
in
that's.
here? That's I mean, you say Mel Gibson and train reaction, everybody kind of assumes anyways. But yeah, Julie, no, I love that popcorn rating, honestly, and I love that
Yeah, I do too.
you put it at that for such personal reasons too. That's the entire reason that we're here. We are talking about what this movie means to us and what other movies mean to us. That's the whole basis of Basic Binges and Nom Talk. And I love that explanation because you're right. Here's the thing: as much as I love this movie, and I did give it a five because of its achievement for in cinematic history, if you were to ask me, would I take this with me on Desert Island? Would this make the Desert Island cut? And I actually don't think I would. I don't think I would. I think Robin Hood or Spaceballs might have a better shot at it, and Young Frankenstein too. Do I love
Agreed.
this movie with all my heart? Absolutely. But you're right. This wouldn't necessarily be a Desert Island movie for me. I think I'm still sticking with the five, but the reason and the way that you explained why it's a 3.5 for you 100% makes so much sense, and I love that completely.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, of course, of
I'm glad
course.
you think so.
I definitely want to chat about I think it's important for us to talk about this movie in the context of Jen, as you kind of put it, there's definitely humor and this is not a racist movie. This is not, I think that that's what people sometimes tend to misconstrue because terms are used throughout the movie that we don't talk or we don't say anymore. But to me, this is really the antithesis of that. It's it's subverting the expectations and the culture at the time and kind of shunning it and showing us how those sort of racist and ignorant beliefs are the stupidest moronic things that we could ever point to in society or try in society. And I wanted to kind of kick it, Jen, especially since you kind of started off the conversation. I mean, what do you think about this? If we were to analyze Blazing Saddles and its, you know, its biting satire, satirical elements today, what are your thoughts on all of that and how you kind of perceive what Mel's trying to convey in this movie and everything like that?
So I have an upbringing where I worked hard to shake free of the things that I heard growing up. I'm trying to be as diplomatic as humanly possible.
Of course. Of course.
Let's just say there were some people in my life as I was growing up who wouldn't use those words satirically necessarily. But I, even from a young age, understood that words had power in a bad way and a good way. And I did, from that young age, also understood that I didn't have to believe those same things. So as I got older, I started standing up against that person and kind of pushing back with it, especially after I had kids. I was like, nope, you don't say that in front of my kids.
Yeah.
We don't talk about things like that in front of my kids. I'm not raising my kids that way. I don't believe those things. I don't feel that way myself. And so it's, that's, I think, why when I heard it, I was like, it was my instinct to be like, no, we don't say that. But I actually sat down and I did some Googling about the movie because I was like, how was that? Okay. Okay. I know it's a satire, but you know, I mean, I know it was a different time. And there's a couple other things too. Like the KKK robes. I'm like, even though it was like satire, I'm still like, whoa. But I have to remember things can be comedic for comedy's sake and satire's sake. And then I was like, oh, I didn't know Richard Pryor helped write this movie. Which puts it in a whole other light, because Richard Pryor's comedy, if you've ever seen it from the 70s and 80s, is a whole thing. And wow. Oof. Yeah.
Oh boy. Oh yeah, boy. That's a rabbit hole. Oh yeah. Boy.
You need a towel and some water and maybe some holy water. I mean, my parents were less than careful and cautious about what I was allowed to watch growing up. I saw Eddie Murphy raw when I was very young.
Yeah.
I saw Richard Pryor's stand-up when I was very young. I watched movies. My parents were like, sure, just watch it. Just watch this, watch that. I watched so many things that I probably shouldn't have at very young ages and not supervised. Just like, yeah, you just, if it was on, I could watch it. And so I got exposed to a lot that maybe I shouldn't have, not horror movies or very violent movies, but just comedies. So I saw a lot. I saw The Jerk. I saw, what's the movie with where they're deaf and blind, you know, just like where it's Richard Pryor and Willy Wonka.
Hear no evil, see no evil.
Yeah. 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 Like all these different comedies that nowadays could never get made. So it sort of informed my comedy, but it also kind of let me see, nah, maybe that's not, you know, it's not so great. And so I kind of grew up being able to filter and looking back at this, I can see where they're making fun of it. So I was able to sit back and rewatch it and be like, okay, I see what you're doing here. Oh, I see what that, I get, oh, okay, I see, I get what that is. And the genius of Mel being able to write it like that back then, where the sensibilities were very different. And you know, we have a look at what we have now. I mean, my company has a diversity, equity, and inclusion department, and we have trainings that you can take. We require, I work for a healthcare plan. We require our doctors to do annual training in DEI to stay paneled with us. Like, I mean, my company takes it very seriously. So it's, you know, it's something that I think back then, if someone had suggested a DEI training, you know, the white men in the offices would have laughed you out of out of there, smack their secretary's asses, and then turn back to their scotch and cigarettes at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, right? So, I just, it was so ahead of its time. It really was. And Mel has always been ahead of his time. His humor has always shown that. Richard Pryor was ahead of his time.
There's such a relevance when particularly one of the things that I think holds up is not just the comedy, but I think his commentary on racism, kind of like you were talking about, Mike, where he really does just point the finger back at racism in general and just kind of he has no intention of solving it. And so this whole satire and this whole comedy is really just to point out how stupid it is. And I think the only way to do that is to really like demonstrate the racism of the time in its fullness, like in its completeness. You can't just skirt around it. Like if you're gonna call it out, then like, yeah, you absolutely have to call it out from the beginning. So I really appreciated that in this film in particular, after, like going back and rewatching it, because not only does it still hold up in comedy, but all of its commentary about racism and all of that, like you could apply that to exactly everything that's happening today. Forget the strides we've made. Like, forget all of that. Like, you should still be able to watch this and be like, wow, I actually know those people still. And I thought we were past this, and we're not. And so I think that's one of the brilliant things of this film. I think too, and this is something that has always frustrated me about the conversation with this movie, is people saying things like, oh, you could never get this made today. And I don't know if you've watched enough movies, but this is not the only movie to use the N-word. And I just implore you, if you think it is, just watch any Tarantino movie, any Quentin Tarantino, just pick one. And you're gonna be blown away by what we can get away with today and get an Oscar-nominated film with that word being used infinitely more. But there's also a particularly with something like Django Unchained, there's a clear trajectory of what we're doing satirically in Blazing Saddles paves the way for us to do seriously in something like Django Unchained, where it's doing something very similar. It's doing that exact same subversion. It's making the person of color the smartest man in the room. So it's got a lot of those similarities. So I think this knee-jerk reaction of like, oh, you can't say that. Well, like, okay, but you can though. Like in the right context, you absolutely can. And we do still. There are plenty of movies that deal with racism, that deal with racist, that deal with all of these different kinds of things that we've been talking about, that ramp it up even. I thought my memory of Blazing Saddles was that this was like every other word was that word. And rewatching it again today, I was like, well, it's really not like, yes, for the time, for sure. People were like, whoa, whoa, pump the brakes. But this idea that like you can't make the only reason you can't make Blazing Saddles today is because we already have Blazing Saddles. There's just no reason to move forward and make it again because it stands alone. It stands alone and it doesn't need to be remade.
So the mic would like to point out that Heartless Redeemed talk in third person. So the mic is going to have to talk in third person for the
You did
duration
that on
of.
purpose, didn't you, Eric? Because I said
Derek is so glad he got his rant out before you claim this, Heartless.
Mike knew what you were
Oh,
doing. Mike knew what you were doing. No. I mean, like, sorry. Mike thinks that, this is so freaking hard. The thing about the use of the N-word in this movie is that the people who are saying it are the terrible individuals in this movie. They're the bad guys, or the villains, or the people that are just, you're never going to root for them. They're cowardly, they're stupid, they're dumb. By making Bart the smartest character in this movie, not just the smartest character, the most noble character in this movie, despite the fact this is a very X-Men kind of thing, despite the fact that he's re received all of this discrimination, all this hatred, he's still standing up for this town. Everybody wants to call it quits. Everybody wants to roll over and let Hedley Lamarr take over, the city. But he's like, well, that's not going to happen. I'm not going to let that happen. And I've got a plan. So at one point, you know, he's equal parts Bugs Bunny and John Wayne. And I think that that makes him the most interesting character in this movie, and mm-hmm. the best character in this movie next to him and Jim. And honestly, I think that's the point. It's to showcase that at the end of the day, you know, racism and discrimination is stupid. And Mike thinks Mel Brooks did this because Mel Brooks has likely seen his share of discrimination. He's mm-hmm. very much a prominently big Jewish figure, you know, in the entertainment industry. And he pokes fun of himself as well. And you know, Judaism, his faith, all that. So he knows what it's like to be also to see his share of discrimination, but also how stupid and ignorant people can be. And I think that that's what this movie ultimately is about, and the best thing about it. So Mike really loves the idea of the satire here, and thinks that everything is strategically used to illustrate that point. So Mike would like to ask Julie what Julie would think of all of this as well, since we didn't get Julie's point of view. This is hard.
Julie thinks that Julie agrees with Mike for the most part on, or for all of it, I guess, that basically, yes, it was used very strategically. I agree. I think it's just weird to hear like some of these things. And, you know, we're just, again, we're so conditioned right now to be like, oh, that's bad, it's a bad word, you know, that's bad, you know, but like, but no, but the way that it's used in this movie is so like well like placed, like you said, strategically put in these places to depict these characters in a certain way and move the plot along, and also depict a certain time period in time when this was happening a lot. Like this, it just was. So like, you know, the fact that like, it's very funny, but also like, no, this was actually happening back then. Like,
yeah,
like probably back when he made the film, and also even more so back when the Westerns took place, you know? So yeah. Julie doesn't know what else to say about that.
Derek wants to ask, are we done with this? Can we move on? Did we claim it long enough?
How many more minutes for third person? We can sit in silence.
I did see in the chat that Eric also redeemed for punny for Mike.
Oh wow!
Oh crap!
Yeah. All right. Well, Derek, I'll keep doing it until we stop. Derek will keep doing it until. Okay. All right. Great. Yeah. I think one of the things to your point, Julie, too, is that Mel Brooks, not only does he, you know, like we've all talked about the subversion and using those words very strategically, but one of the things I noticed in this rewatch is he really does kind of remove the power from those words by making every character that uses them the dumbest person you've ever met. Like he goes after the idea that all these people in power that use these words are essentially powerless, and the words that they use have no meaning. The Hedley Lamarr character is a great example of that, because he is this person who thinks he's got this beautiful vocabulary and he's so smart and all of his ideas are brilliant. And he is literally the dumbest person in the movie. And that's intentional. And so not only is he strategic in how he uses those words, but he's also using them in a way that removes their power from them within the context of this. And then Mike, you add that air of nobility around the one person that everybody in that time period and everybody in Westerns would often think is the dumbest person. And he imbues him with all of the smarts, all of the cleverness, all of the heroism, all of the John Wayne Looney Tunes who exist outside and inside the world that's being created. And so those things just really stick out to me as like, this is what we talk about when we talk about genius satire. And we talk about things that, yes, are controversial, but this is why they're so important. And this is why they're being used so well.
Absolutely.
I agree. I was also going to just add one other thing, which is like, I like you were saying how Mel Brooks like makes fun of himself. And I also think it's important to point out that he makes fun of everybody. Yes. So, like he makes fun of every race, every ethnicity, every type of person, like every trope. Like it's, which I do appreciate that as well. And he definitely, there's definitely all of that in this movie too. So
let's not forget, he plays a Native American in red paint who speaks Yiddish. Like, let's not forget that exists in this movie too.
Yes, it does.
I'm trying my hardest not to talk because I just can't think of a pun right now. But Jen,
you'll think of 50 when you don't have to.
That's true.
I know.
No, like, literally, I'm the same way. I can't, when I'm put on the spot, it's a whole different thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I want to shift things just a little bit and ask, because this is such a seminal classic, because this isn't the first time that we've all seen it. Really, what is the best scene in this movie for you guys? Like, if you guys had to pick a scene that just whenever somebody says Blazing Saddles, it's the first thing that you hear or you think of, you know, that's what comes into mind. Jen, I'm going to start with you. Favorite scene in this movie, in the history of this movie?
I think the one that had me laughing the hardest when I rewatched it was when he tricked them by taking himself.
Oh, so good. Oh, God.
I was like, how did that work? How did that work? It was, that's how stupid they are. They were so mad that somebody sent this black guy to their town. They're willing to believe that somebody has him. Of course someone took him hostage because there's a black guy in their town. Oh, my God. What are, somebody took him hostage. They're going to kill him. They're going to kill him.
It's such a great
scene. You are so dumb.
So good.
I was laughing. I had to pause it because I just needed a minute. That was genius. And he did the two oh God, I was dying. Cleavon Little was perfect for that.
Oh,
agreed.
So Richard Pryor was originally supposed to play the role, but they couldn't the studio wouldn't insure him because of his fondness for substances. So he was a liability. I don't think he would have been as good as Cleavon Little.
I agree.
Because I don't think he could have played it as the straight man like Cleavon needed to play it.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's a certain charisma that Cleavon has as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's a different kind of charisma than what Richard Pryor, like, totally different. Like,
that scene in particular requires a straightness and a straightness of charm to be able to pull off that. While I absolutely adore Richard Pryor, I don't think that scene would be a scene where you'd look at and be like, yeah, it's one of the best scenes in the movie. I'm just imagining him do that and just how wild it would be and how, like you said, chaotic. And the reason it plays so well is because it's so earnest. It's so authentic in the way that he's presenting it. And that's what sells it. That's the beauty of that scene. Yeah, that's a great pick.
It's a wonderful pick.
And then just the absurdity of when they're just magically on the Warner Brothers.
Yes. And, hands down, one of the best endings to a movie ever.
On the big dance scene.
Oh, yeah.
Another example of how no group is safe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mel Brooks.
Yep.
I was like, and I think with this, there's not like one big scene. It's little, for me, it was just little things like, we'll keep the N-words, we'll keep the C words, but not the Irish. All right, fine. And I was like, hey, why not the Irish? So it was little things like that. There were just there's little things. And that was the thing, is that's how clever he gets. He gets that clever minutia in there where you're like, hey. So, which of course, when I was, you know, probably seven when I saw this for the first time, I didn't appreciate, oddly enough, nor should I have. But yeah, I think for sure for me, that was the, when he took himself hostage, that was my favorite.
Oh man. Cleavon Little's a genius. And as you know, Lily von Stoop would tell you, he should change his name from Cleavon Little to Cleavon Big, because Lily von Stoop thought so.
It's
sorry. Yeah, that's my terrible pun. Hopefully you like that, Harless. That was for you. That was for you and Lily. But anyways, brilliant picks, Jen. Julie, favorite scene.
Okay, so like the scene that has been in my head since I was a child is the bean scene. I think now I can't say that that's my favorite scene, but it definitely still like is a scene that just pops up in my head sometimes randomly. Like, just, especially when I just sometimes when you're just thinking about beans and like you're just like, oh yeah, that scene. I mean, it's just because it's so silly, but it's so funny. It's so like, you can't go wrong with a good fart joke. So like, and that was like one of the biggest fart jokes I think I've seen in a movie. So like, but yeah, but like I think now, like, because this was, that was from when I was like a kid. Like now I think, or at least younger, a lot younger. I don't remember exactly the first time I watched this, but I know I saw like scenes of it pop up on TV when I was a kid. So I definitely remember that scene for like I've remembered it for a long time. But I would say, God, I mean, it's hard to pick because I love all of the scenes between Cleavon and Jim. I really love the scene where like they just have the standoff and like, they pull out their guns and like he just shoots all of their guns out of their hands and they cut back to him and he's just standing there like you don't even see his gun was taken out or anything, but like he just wiped them all out and he's like, give your applause to the Waco kid. Like, I really enjoy that one. I just really enjoy any scene where like they best the bad guys basically because it's just so ridiculous and fun and yeah.
It's brilliant. I love those scenes too. And in fact, I think the bean scene is often, cited as one of the iconic moments in this movie that
Yeah,
everybody
yeah.
just ends up loving. That and for me, the introduction of Mongo into the town, he goes up to this guy who's on a horse, and then he punches the horse
Yeah.
falls down. It's just so bad. I think the lines end up popping out to me even more so than the scenes themselves. Because I think Jen, you covered one of my favorite scenes, which is the ending scene. Julie, you covered the bean scene. But I think some of the lines are just golden, where, their meet cute, Bart and Jim's meet cute, where he's like, what you're my guest, I'm your host, what do you like to do? And he's like, well, I don't know, play chess, screw.
Screw.
He's like, let's play chess. Freaking funny. God, that's brilliant. And then just everything Gene Wilder does in this movie, I'm
Yeah.
not giving him enough credit, where he's just like, yeah, my name is Jim, but people call me Jim. And then
Jim.
just so good. And his timing is brilliant. I just
They're
love
such a
every
good duo together,
yeah, they're
too.
so
Like,
good
because
together.
it's
Yeah.
Like we didn't get a chance to see him and Richard Pryor together in this, but then we got to see them together in at least four more movies after this because they're a good duo. We did not get to see Cleavon Little and Gene Wilder in enough movies together. I wish we did,
Robbery,
honestly.
robbery.
Yeah.
That,
Derek, favorite
so
scene.
yeah, so actually, it's funny because that meet cute is one of my favorite scenes. Just that whole sequence.
Yeah.
I love watching those two together. They are just every scene they're in is great, but that first scene, him telling the story, and doing the little stupid little hands,
I shoot with this hand.
it's so dumb and it's so good. And Wilder, his ability to just sell the most, like, just sell the most insane comedic bits with just this brilliant straight face and
Yes.
art, like the earnestness that he has in his delivery is just absolutely magnificent. And then the whole chess game where he steals the chess piece and he claps his head, like that, everything about that scene is
Yeah.
just it's just absolutely brilliant. And yes, I would have killed for more Wilder little combos. Like they are just absolutely incredible together. And it's a robbery that we didn't get more of them because they were both just so fantastic together. I love Pryor and I love Pryor and Wilder together. They have that weird kinetic energy, but these two are just the straight man and the straight man playing it for up for last. It's just, oh God, it's so good. It's match made in heaven. And then honestly, my second is anything with Madeline Kahn. I think her intro is just, it's just one of the best intros. Her I'm tired, that whole sequence of her doing that song and then just making, are you in show business? No, then get your feet off my stage. Like, she comes on too because for most of this film so far, outside of like the villains, everybody that we've seen are clearly outside of all the villains are so dialed up to 11, right? They're so over the top. They're clearly spoofs. And then, you get this intro of these two straight men. Then you get Mongo, who's kind of a character. And then you get her, and she just has a whole different level of 11. Like, She's on a different dial, and she's clearly turned up. Like, the satire of her character is, like, outrageously hilarious and so dumb, but it's dumb in a completely different way. And what she brings to the table is just, Madeline Kahn is so good in this movie. In the brief time we get her, like, she's not used enough, in my honest opinion, because she is just so good in this movie. So yeah, I love her whole sequence, from her intro to her interactions with Little, and then her reactions after feeding in the giant sausages.
What were those called?
Beener Snoodens or something.
Yeah. And he's like, no, baby, 15 is my limit.
Yeah.
I love it so much. They're so good. So those are probably my two favorite scenes in the movie, because they just hold up. They're so good.
There's a reason she got nominated for an Oscar for this, for supporting actress. It's because she's
amazing.
Goddamn amazing.
I don't think I actually realized that. And props to her. I love Madeline Kahn. Obviously, I am channeling a little bit of Lily tonight.
A little bit of Lily. But yeah, I love the outfit, honestly.
Oh, thank you.
So I've been neglecting the chat. I apologize, guys. I'm so sorry about this. I know, Heartless, you've been redeeming a lot of points, and we want you to keep redeeming points. You asked why not. I don't use my points often. Agreed. You should use your points as much as you want. Just not on singing. Okay. All right. Well, two quick ones. Everybody hydrate really quickly. I will. I don't know what I'm drinking.
Hydrate
there.
For you.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you. And then stretch. This one I could do. So stretch. And then one more redemption, which is and actually, Heartless, I'm going to get to your redemption of this one, because I think it's going to lead to a discussion. But before I do, Q-Ball also mentioned Mel Brooks gets a lot of crap from people, and I'm censoring that, you know, that they couldn't believe he made John Wayne to say the N-word, and John Wayne came to Mel's defense and said that he didn't make me. I read the script. I loved it. And he just pointed out the racism of what was going on still today in this film. Yeah, so great points, Q-Ball. I didn't even realize that about John Wayne being in this movie, which is probably just, you know, my ignorance. If he was in this in a cameo role, that's kind of awesome. And I'm glad that, you know, John Wayne understood the satire of this. This is great. So thank you for pointing that out. Yeah. And then, Heartless, you redeemed a poll. And you asked who we think would be the casted in a remake of this movie.
Oof.
Which, first off, I hope never happens. Because unfortunately, if I were to cast anyone, it would probably be Michael Cera, Samuel L. Jackson, and a few other people. But you'd make them dogs instead of dogs and cats instead of that. And I'm being facetious here, because literally, Blazing Saddles was remade in 2022
as
a computer animated comedy called Paws of Fury: The Legend of Hank, where Michael Cera played a dog,
Samuel L.
Jackson played a cat, Ricky Gervais.
I did not know this.
Yes, yeah. Mel Brooks was also in the movie as well.
What?
This was inspired by Blazing Saddles and was given Mel Brooks' blessing to actually do this. It is not a good movie. I actually had to cover it. But it was actually remade. No one's going to ever know that and remember that. Yeah, Heartless is like, what?
I saw a trailer for that, but I never made the connection, so they must not have done a good job.
They did not do a good job, because it went from, you know, cowboy western to samurai movie, but the dog was
that's interesting.
The sheriff in a land full of cats, and then the cats were racist to the dog sheriff.
Interesting.
So, okay. Blazing Saddles for kids. Sure.
Yes.
Why not?
Blazing Saddles for kids.
Yeah. Why not?
Only not good.
It kind of makes me want to watch it, though, not gonna lie.
I know. I'm sure I skipped it, because I just had no desire to go down that rabbit hole, but now I might.
Cat owner, I'm a
fan. We can hate watch it.
This is such a challenging question, because I just don't know who would be. I mean, God. Because I wouldn't want somebody who has, I don't know. I honestly don't know. These roles are so perfectly cast with yeah. people who are just timeless in the things that they do. Because I'm trying to think of like comedians that get it, like, you know, I'm thinking of people like Jamie Foxx and Kevin Hart and, you know, these, even Samuel Jackson, like these people that get pretty much most of those roles right now. And yeah. I wouldn't want any of them to yeah. play this role. Like not a single person that's prominent right now I would want to play this role.
Yeah. yeah. I agree. I think I want like an unknown maybe to play.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
replacing Gene Wilder too, though. It's like, there really yeah. isn't anybody like.
I mean, who are they going to replace him with? Timothy Chalamet?
I was going to say, we've already tried twice with Wonka and it has not gone well. So maybe we leave the Gene Wilder roles alone, guys.
Yeah. Jen, what were you going to say?
Please. Because like, I just don't think anyone, it's not that like, you know, no one can be as good of an actor as him, but right. his style is so unique and different yeah, than so many actors, especially actors today, are just not the same like wit and charisma and style yeah. that he had. So like
yeah
it would just be I couldn't even think of. I mean, I would want to go with unknowns, I think, and maybe like people from Saturday Night Live, I would say, could like maybe pull it off because mm-hmm. they have a lot of things to pull off, but I wouldn't even want to see that. Like,
yeah. Yep. Jen, what were you going to say?
I don't know about this class of Saturday Night Live.
Maybe not the most recent
one. Yeah, I kind of agree. Yeah.
My first thought when you said recast it, my brain immediately flashed on an image of Idris Elba in The Dark Tower, which I haven't seen because I'm a huge Stephen King fan.
It's not good.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's not good. You did the right thing.
Don't do that.
And I really want Mike Flanagan to make it as a series. Like, that's my dream.
Because yeah.
I think he would
Dark Tower. Yeah.
Team, yeah.
But
yeah.
I won't see the movie. But Idris Elba in that, like, Western garb of.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, let's see that. Because he can do funny. And yeah. he's cool as a cucumber. And he's mm-hmm. easy on the eye. I mean, he could check all the boxes.
Yeah. I would, you know, now that you say that, because it made me think of The Harder They Fall, which actually has all of those people in that movie. And the one that I might actually go with would probably be some, and I don't even know that I would pick him, but somebody along the lines of Lakeith Stanfield, who I think yeah. has the potential to play comedy straight. I mean, if you've seen like Sorry to Bother You, even The Book of Clarence, which isn't that good. But he does have that ability to play very strong comedy. I mean, especially in Sorry to Bother You, like that's such a strong satirical type of movie about capitalism and you know, corporate culture today. And he plays that role very straight. But it's also a satire. So that's kind of the person I envision, when I think of somebody to play that role.
Alongside, yeah. I think Jeremy Allen White has been the top contender.
Oh, that's good. Go. Yeah, he mainly just because he looks like a reincarnated version of Gene Wilder.
I haven't seen The Bear, and I don't think I've really seen Jeremy Allen White act, so I can't really form an opinion on that one. But
he's great. He is a great actor. Like he's legitimately one of our best younger generation actors working today. Like he's great.
Clickbait article that says he is Gene Wilder's grandkid, because that's the stupidest thing. But and know that there is an episode in season 2 that will traumatize you tremendously.
Yeah.
But the next episode is like a soothing blanket that will hug you.
Yeah.
So it's okay.
I think that's a good pick, Mike. I think that's a good pick. I think not even just because he looks like him, but I've seen him tap into some of the quirkier part. Like he's very dramatic. But if you've ever seen Fingernails, which is a movie I like, but I know nobody else does, that's a very like small kind of role where there is a lot of comedy, but it's very dry. So he's got to play the whole thing incredibly straight. And I think of his roles in that vein, and he might actually, you pair those two together, I think you might be able to make this work. It would still be awful and it won't even touch the original, but since this is an assignment, we have to do it. I think those would be the two that I would go with.
Yeah.
So Lakeith Stanfield and Jeremy Allen White.
That's what I would pick. I would do that.
Yeah.
All right.
Let really a strong comedic director and writer kind of handle something like this too. Like Cord Jefferson, who just did American Fiction. might do a really good job with doing something like that. But I honestly feel like if any Hollywood executive were to approach any director in Hollywood to try and do this, all of them would say no because
Oh
of
yeah.
the
No.
battles. Unless you're doing it in a dog and cat version of this movie. Yes.
Let's do it in a cute kids animated version. No.
Yeah, let's have Lily von Stupp and Bart have make love and but with cats and dogs. I don't know. That's weird.
I know you're trying to no sell this film, Mike, but you're kind of selling me on this film. I'm not gonna lie. Like, the harder you try to no sell it, the more interested I am in this movie.
So we hope you viewers out there enjoyed our Nom Talk for Pause and Fury.
Pause
Yes, The Legend of Hank.
Oh my gosh.
All things considered, guys. Honestly, I wish I could do this like the rest of the evening. This was so much fun, and honestly, I feel like we barely scratched the surface of anything. That's a Pause and Fury pun, by the way.
Hey.
But that being said, I really enjoyed this, and I enjoyed talking to you guys about it. Everyone had such amazing things to say, and I'm so grateful that we got to relive this movie together, and just enjoy and bond over our love of Mel Brooks. So, with that said, I'm going to put it out on outros right now. Derek, where can everyone find you?
So you can find me on most social medias at DRock Comedy. That's DROK Comedy. And then you can also find all of my stuff on nerdbot.com. Tons of reviews. And then you can also follow me on Letterboxd, which is also DRock Comedy. I can't do full pieces for every movie that I watch. So some of them get quick pun reviews, and all of those will be on Letterboxd.
We love it, sir. Always bring the puns, especially when somebody redeems Nom Talk points.
Yes.
Julie, where can everyone find you?
You can find me on Instagram at JRaylan, JRAELYN, and I'm also on that clock app, the TikTok at JRayLady, JRAELADY. Those are my primaries. Yeah.
Very cool. And Jen, last but not least, where can everyone find you?
Oh.
Oh, I
Muted.
think the sound got knocked out. There you
Oops.
go.
Okay. My throat actually went dry is what happened there.
Oh,
no, you can find me on Instagram, do underscore as underscore Peggy says. You can also find me on Letterboxd. I'm trying to be much better with my reviews, and my son is very proud of me for it. And it's just Peggy says. Mike has read some of my reviews,
I have, and I love your
love it.
reviews on
I love it.
Letterboxd, by the way.
Yes, I have
Mike, do
not
we
gotten.
follow each other on Letterboxd?
I don't think so. I'm very much not active, but that's why I recommend following Jen because we share very similar thoughts, and
Okay,
her
all
sense of
right.
acerbic humor is just brilliant.
I did
So
learn not to
definitely.
comment on any of Mike Flanagan's sassy posts because
For
tons of
Madam Web.
notifications. I'm still getting Madam Web notifications from his review, and I'm like,
I did that once on a Babylon trash. And I jumped on to agree with the Babylon trash, and this was like 2 years ago, and I still get notifications of somebody commenting on a Babylon post from forever
He
ago.
basically tweaked the AMC Nicole Kidman script, and that was his review of Madam Web, and I just made a little
Yes,
post.
oh, so I saw that. It's so good.
Oh God,
So
I'm gonna
good.
get comments on this until I die. And then also the West Coast Avengers are a cosplay volunteer group that Mike is in with me, and we are going to be ramping up with our springtime events here, Ronald McDonald House and things like that, and we are at California Avengers.
That's right. As if you guys didn't know I was into cosplay. Anyways, and as always, you guys can find me at TidyBoBoy182 on Instagram, Twitter, all that, but primarily on my site, the Nerds of, well, the site that I write for, the nerdsofcolor.org, the whatstowatch.com as well. And that's it. That's it, LA. Ugh, I'm having trouble with words today, guys. But honestly, thank you guys for joining us. So grateful for this. And until next time, happy trails, guys. We'll see ya.
Happy trails.